Welcome to the Wanting It More podcast. I am your host, Jana Dentonhouse, and it's an absolute delight to have you here. I'm a marriage and intimacy educator, as well as a creator of the Wanting It More program, which has helped thousands of women who are married to men want and enjoy it more in the bedroom. You know, having low desire was something that I personally struggled with for years in my marriage, so I absolutely get it all. You are not alone. Just a heads up, I use all the words in this podcast, so if you've got little ears around or you're in public setting, you may want to pop in some earbuds. I hope you enjoy the episode. Welcome back to the podcast. It is great to have you here today. We're talking with Colin. Colin just completed the program with his wife, and he was a brave soul who decided to come on and share his intimate sex life details with you. So, Colin, congratulations. Did you know you were going to do that? Let's get started with an introduction.
I mean, I had a general inkling, but yeah, I'm Colin, and I use he, him pronouns. I've got two kids, and I live in Tennessee. I've been with my wife for almost 20 years at this point, and we started the program just a couple months ago, and it's been kind of life-changing.
Well, that's a great place to start. Kind of life-changing. Well, take us back in your life, pre-program, early days, childhood, teen years, young adulting. What was your experience of sex like, your sex education, your body, all of that early stuff?
Sure. So I grew up in a house where both of my parents were therapists. My dad is a mental health counselor and my mom was a sex therapist. So I grew up in a space that was really sex positive. There was a lot of conversation about sex. There weren't any mysteries. My house was the house that all of the neighborhood boys would come to like look at books and have questions answered. And if I didn't have an answer to something, I would pass it off to my mom and then my mom would talk about something. So we would be like playing Mario Kart and one of my friends would be like, you know, just flipping through one of the, you know, sex books. So it's just, you know, how I grew up. That was my middle school experience. I don't know what yours was, but it was a really good time to, you know, it was a good way to grow up and have an understanding of my place in the world, especially in regards to consent. But also, I was raised in that feminist mindset, and having an understanding that women are constantly and truly being told that they are objects and being told that they should, that, and it's not just by men, it's by women too, it's perpetuated by women as well, that the idea that they are only there for a man's pleasure or a man's sexual release, and that is really problematic, to say the least. And so growing up in that kind of a household had me be really aware of the conversations that I was having with girls as I was starting to figure out my own sexuality and figure out my own, you know, likes and dislikes and et cetera. And so there were a lot, you know, there were girlfriends that I had, and it wasn't thousands of girls that I was with. It was, I mean, really like starting in middle school, like late middle school, I think I had, and then into high school, I had maybe four or five different girlfriends of those times. And all of them were in the 6 month to a year long range in that time period. So it was good to be with people that long. But my experience sexually, like virginity is such a weird describer of things, because one, why does it matter? And two, who cares? And three, like, it's always like this mark of you did it. And I just, it's, I don't know. There's so much wrapped up into that. But I was my first experience with sexual intercourse was when I was 17. And I grew also in that household. A lot of it was growing up in the space of making sure that she was taken care of first, sort of a thing, and making sure that that everybody was, you know, consent, and that everybody was on board, and checking in before, and checking in during, and checking in after, and finding out like what's going on, and all that good stuff. And then I met my wife, and we came from very different households. She grew up in a very religious house, like a very Christian house. Super cool people. Super, I have an incredible relationship with my parents-in-law. But there was just not a lot of discussion about sex. It was sex positive in the quotes, sort of a thing, in that, sure, it's okay to have sex when you're married, and it's okay to be aware of yourself, but not in the sense of we're gonna have an open conversation about it, and we're gonna really talk about what this looks like and what this means and how to be safe both emotionally and physically. And there was just like a barrier. I didn't grow up in that house, so I can't speak to all of it, but there was kind of a barrier, like a film over that discussion. Everything else was open conversation, but that one just had kind of a gate that could not be surpassed. And so when we got together, I was, you know, very open and very communicative about my previous experiences sexually, and that I was, before marriage, I wanted to be sexually intimate, like with intercourse. Through the program, I learned that sex isn't just, you know, intercourse. That I basically wanted to have sex before marriage, and that, you know, I'm happy to wait as long as possible. I'm happy to take as much time as needed, because my wife had not previously had, she had had sexual experiences, like, you know, oral sex and hands and all that kind of stuff, but not anything in regards to like, but intercourse. And so she, like about a year into our relationship, she decided that she wanted to do that, and I checked in multiple times, and she's like, yes. And so we did, and then here we are, and here we are 20 years later. But I think it's been an interesting experience. But yeah, that's the general boilerplate of what my experience has been growing up.
I think you're the first person I've interviewed that's a child of a sex therapist. This is just fascinating to me. And just for my own curiosity, were you embarrassed by your mom and her books and all the words? You don't seem like you are.
No. I mean, it was, I would get in trouble at school because I would call things as they're named. Like, you know, I would use like actual terminology of like penis, and you know, I would talk about, you know, he kicked me in the testicles or something like that, or, you know, like something of that, like we would be talking about breasts or like whatever. And, you know, and so I would get in trouble with administrators at school because I was not using appropriate language, even though I feel like that is the appropriate language, and the words that we kind of the like twee words that we give these parts of our body just to make it feel less clinical, I guess, is strange. But yeah, no, it's always been, yeah, it's always been a comfortable conversation for me.
And what was the response of the girls that you were with when you were checking in with them and asking them, were they uncomfortable with that, awkward with that? Were they appreciative of that? Did they reciprocate?
To be completely honest, I think that everybody was down for it, but I don't think anybody really had, because I grew up with it, so it wasn't a real, it wasn't like a thing. It wasn't like consent, it's an enthusiastic consent, like, you know, it wasn't like a thing, it wasn't a term. And so it was just making sure that everybody's okay with what's happening. And everybody that I was with and had been with was very okay with that and very happy with that communication. But it wasn't, in a strange way, it wasn't novel, if that's what we're driving at. You know, it wasn't a novel thing. It was, it seemed normal to me. And so, and I think maybe also too, because it was, you know, when I was sexually active, like with intercourse and all that kind of things, like it was late, much later high school and early college. So, and it wasn't that, you know, it was like maybe like 5 or 6 people. And in that way, we also were all learning how to do that with each other and be with each other and such. So a lot of those, like those cultural messaging and et cetera, that made women, that caused a lot of feelings within women and how they feel about themselves. I feel like it was there, but I think that a lot of the experiences with men that also solidify some of those cultural messaging hadn't happened yet. Mm-hmm. And so there was just a lot of, it was very normal to have that kind of discourse during, sex and et cetera. Yeah.
And maybe also the social circles that you were in.
Oh,
maybe,
absolutely.
Yeah. That it, and the people that you were choosing to be with were maybe of that same mindset.
100%. Yeah.
The reason why I ask, it just brings me so much hope for the future. It just brings me, like, you know, because on this podcast, this is a very rare experience to hear. Usually it is no talking, no consent, you know, quite the opposite. So it's exciting. I just imagine a future that could look like this and how wonderful that will. And also you had some struggles with your sex life in your marriage. So what was the progression of that?
Sure. So what's interesting, so all of this kind of coincides with working through the program in and of itself. So I'll start there. So ever since the first time that we had intercourse, like everything was okay, everything was great. We moved on from that, you know, like moved on from that. We moved forward. We continued to do that sort of thing. Everybody was happy about it. Everybody was on board. My wife was like super interested and super excited about it. And really, this was a new thing and how cool. And then at some point she left to go to for an internship. And so she was gone for about a year. We were long distance for about a year. And that was when we were also planning our wedding and like all that kind of good stuff. But during that time, after that, everything kind of seemed weird. It kind of seemed like off, where being physically together and with each other there was some sort of wall that had come up that I was unfamiliar with, and thinking that maybe it was just the long distance and it'd been some time and et cetera. And so I, you know, just, it was okay, cool, that's fine. And then we got married, and then, you know, a couple years into our marriage, there was just a larger, we're always very communicative. That's our best. That's honestly our biggest strength. And, you know, talking about our emotions and like how we're feeling and what it is that we feel like might be causing that emotion or getting to the root of the issue or, you know, that kind of a thing. And so there would be discussions about, hey, you know, this is something that I am very much into. I would love to be physically intimate with you. And I don't really know how to do that because anytime that we have the opportunity to do so, and this is before kids, you know, I would get, you know, rebuffed. And so, and that was fine. But it was getting to the point where, like we're talking, like it would go, at first it was like a month and then it was like 2 months and then it was 3 months or something of that nature before of like any kind of physical interaction, regardless of like intercourse. Right. And so there was just a, hey, what's going on? Do you, and you know, we talked about this in the program, but just in terms of the relation of this to the, our in within our relationship, you know, it was like, do you, or do you want that anymore? Or do you desire, like, am I physically attractive to you? And like, you know, all that kind of stuff, you know, that we talk about in the program and all that kind of stuff. But, you know,
no, it's important to bring that up because it's so relate. Of course, you would have those questions. It's so related.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so, because like, you know, we went from being pretty regular to suddenly be not regular. And so there was just a lot of confusion and doubt and grief and pain in regards to that. And, you know, when we would talk about it, you know, there would just be tears because she didn't know why it was not something she wanted to do. And then I would also be upset because I didn't want to push her into doing anything. Mm-hmm. But also at the same time, I'm, you know, a physical person and this is a part of how I connect with my partner. And I very much value that part of the relationship. And it doesn't necessarily, and now I've learned that it's not sex, it's just intimacy. And we just didn't have that in our relationship. Like we would hold hands and, you know, and kiss every once in a while and stuff. But in terms of like intentional intimacy, right? That was the issue. And so, you know, we would have those conversations and we would talk things through. And then eventually, like we would even come up with, there were like systems and like all these things where it was like she would give me like car, like coupons essentially. Like, you know what I mean? It was like, here's a coupon for a blowjob. And it's like, great. Cool. And you know, it was like, are you sure? Yes, absolutely. You know, like there's a lot of, you know, cause from her perspective, from my understanding, she was saying things to the effect of, you know, well, he's waited long enough. You know, I don't mind doing this for him. I am, you know, even though it's not something that I particularly enjoy, although enjoy isn't the right word because the what she has described, and I can't speak fully for her, but in our conversations, she has said that it's still enjoyable and it's still fun. And she likes doing something with me for me, but there was never anything that was, even though I would want to, and I truly get a lot out of bringing her pleasure, whatever that means, it was just never something that her brain could relax into doing. Mm-hmm. And so that was a big issue. And then we saw a sex therapist, and they recommended schedules, and that was great for a minute, because we would, you know, it was on the calendar and like, that's when it was, and we would do that. But at the same time, I still felt like I was nagging because I'd be like, hey, it's on the calendar, you know, and, cause time would go by, like, I would just like, let it go on the calendar. I would just let it go. And then it just wouldn't happen. And I don't think that it was intentional on her part. I just think that it wasn't anything that she was looking forward to or anything that she was excited about. So why would you be like, oh, it's this weekend. You know what I mean? Like, it would never be something that she was interested in. So that's the long and the that's a very long answer to your question about like why we ended up in the program. And we got there because of honestly a Facebook ad. So hooray for marketing. But yeah, no, we were really concerned about doing it. And, you know, my wife was like, are you sure? And I was like, let's just, what? I mean, we've tried all these different things. Let's do it. Let's see what happens. And so we did. And it's been great.
So that started 2 years into your relationship. And you said you've been together for 20 years?
Yeah, 2 years into our 2 years into our marriage. So we got married 5 years into us being together. And so really this occurrence of our like sex life being relatively, I don't know the right, unsatisfactory isn't the right word, but it's more in the, for both of us, you know what I mean? Like we were both on different levels of what we were looking for and wanting slash not wanting, except basically we were on two different planes, mm-hmm. in regards to that. For about 12 years.
Yeah.
14, 13, not, no, 13 years. Yeah.
13 mm-hmm. years. Yeah. That's not unusual, that cycle. And I think you've summarized it so well. And I think a lot of people listening will feel very heard that, there's good intentions on both sides. Nobody's being malicious.
Yeah.
There is a lot of questioning. I don't know, a lot of guilt. A lot of feeling rejected, confused because you know your wife loves you, and yet there's this unsatisfying feeling. It is you try to read the books, you try to look at blogs, you try to get help, and the cycle continues. And yep. You end up having an event, but it's not the outcome. It's not the feeling that you're looking for.
Yeah, and sometimes it was okay, and sometimes it was great. Like sometimes the event was fantastic, but it was just it was random. You know, there wasn't it was unpredictability. There was no predictability as to like when it would be. You know, sometimes it was very mechanical, and then sometimes it was fantastic, but it was just dependent upon a myriad of factors that were undefinable or kind of describable. Like you couldn't figure out how we got to the space where everybody was having a good time. But yeah.
All right. That's so different. Everyone's dying to know what was the big secret. What shifted things for you? What pieces? I mean, don't hold anything back. There's no secrets on the podcast. So what did you learn? What did you change? What did you shift?
Like from result of the program?
Yeah, like all the things. What was life changing about this experience for you?
Sure. So, one of the biggest things for me. Okay, there's two things really that the program shifted. There was at the very beginning of the program, I was a little concerned that we had spent money on something that was very obvious. You know, that it was like, oh, cool, consent. Yeah. And safety. Yeah. And like, you know, and all
and
these
culture.
Different things that we've
I've been doing culture. That for since yeah. I was a baby.
yeah, I got it. I know all these things. Absolutely. You know, and it was just fascinating. So, but, you know, but it was still, you know, promising. But the thing that was earth shattering for me from that perspective, like going through those paths and seeing the difficulty that some of these men, and this is a no offense, or I'm not dragging anybody down, but seeing the difficulty that some of these men were experiencing going through some of these paths, going through some of these notions of compassion and safety and culture and all of that stuff, which was so obvious and just a deeply seated part of myself, and that it was not the case for almost anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
And that broke me a little bit, to be honest. I was so upset to see so many men, because I would, you know, the circles that I run in and the things that I do in my work and in my life, there's a lot of, I don't want to say echo chamber, but there's a lot of very emotionally in touch male presenting people that I hang out with. And so to see a greater swath of the male community struggle so deeply with some of this work was just so, I mean, truly, like, it was life-changing, it was earth-shattering, it made me understand so much of, like, what some of my other female friends, like, would comment about, and, you know, this whole thing about, you know, like, the men versus women stuff, and the basically all of that sexist cultural crap that I thought that maybe we were moving beyond, and that maybe culturally we had accepted. Like, the best describer that I could say is, my wife and I talked about this, is that, you know, in middle school and such, you learn about the civil rights movement in America, and you learn about how, you know, Dr. Martin Luther King and, you know, the marches and, like, all of the stuff that went into the civil rights era and all the protests, etc. And, you know, suddenly, you know, laws were put into place and all of these minds were changed and yay, we fixed racism. And, like, that's not the case. You know what I mean? That's super not the case. And I thought, well, yeah, we fixed sexism. Like, it's like, yeah, there's a lot of folks out there. You know what I mean? Like, there's a lot of folks out there, sure. And that's, like, mostly, like, folks who just don't know and, you know, all that kind of thing. And it's just about education. But, like, no, it's not that. It's very much not that. So many folks, regardless of where they're coming from, what their upbringing is, you know, what country they're from, their ethnicity, whatever, it doesn't matter. This is so deeply seated, this idea of misogyny and the patriarchy and all of this stuff of, like, male-centered societal rules.
Mm-hmm.
It's so disheartening. And then I fully understood why in the program, those were the first things that we talked about, because we had to. You have to, you know, part of my work is being a teacher, and you got to lay the foundation first before you talk about the, you know, the thing that you came to do, right? You got to, like, set up, you got to have context. Context is so important. You got to have context for everything before you really do any of the work. And so learning about that was just, it was crushing. And I felt really alienated at first, because I did not belong to that. I didn't feel like I belonged to that group, and anything that I would say, I didn't want to make it feel like I was attacking or criticizing or not empathizing, but I couldn't understand where some of these people were coming from, because I just never lived that experience. And so I just listened and tried to provide support as best I could, but I didn't really contribute or participate, because I didn't feel like from the larger community of men that I would be accepted. And it's still kind of the case, but it was fascinating to experience.
Did it help you have a better understanding of the world that your wife lives in separate from your relationship?
Infinitely. Infinitely. You know, I mean, there's a difference between, you know, the relationship that we're in, even though, like, I was her first, you know, intercourse experience, you know what I mean? And, but there's all this other cultural messaging and all the other men that she had ever been with, and whether they had been kind, like a lot of, like, all of these folks are kind. It's just like, they just don't know, you know? And I
or even just media and walking down the street and interacting with men at work and on and on.
And like advertising and movies and all of the everything that shows, you know, these very distinct cultural norms and like what we should expect from women and what women should be expecting from themselves or each other. And all of this stuff is just like so deeply problematic. It made me feel so naive, that I just did not get it, that I didn't understand. Because you just, you know, you think that until you're revealed, you don't realize that you, the way that you're thinking, like similarly, like I kind of had an opposite reaction to what the men in the program were having. Like they were getting revealed, like, oh, this is the way that it should be. And then I was getting revealed, this is the way that it is. Yeah. And it was heartbreaking. Yeah.
It's like when I was talking to my Ugandan friend and we were living in the same city and I made some totally ridiculous remark about, oh, there's no racism. Like there's no racism in this city. This is a melting pot. There's people. And he just looked at me like, you have no freaking idea. I get on a bus. I walk into a store. I sit down at a restaurant. I walk down the street. You cannot know the experience of somebody else.
Yep. You really can't. You really can't. So to your prior question about my wife and like the big reveal, the big issue that, well, the big
the turning
revelation
point
that we had.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. That we had. When we went through the program, we suddenly got into the ideas of these exploration dates, and which was really exciting, to have a time to be, you know, just intimate with your partner, whatever that means. You know what I mean? Like just having time where you are setting aside dedicated, intentional space for the two of you to be together. And that was just so exciting to me. I was so happy about doing that. And then the very first XD that we had was after my wife had gone to a conference. All these shifts tend to happen when she goes off by herself. And then she comes back and hits me with the thing. I don't know. Like, you know what I mean? There's something there. And so she comes back from this conference and she realized that as she was driving home, that there was something deeply resonating for her when some of the women in the group talked about safety. And it was really perplexing to her because she's always felt safe in our relationship. That I'm, as she said, you know, she told me that, you know, I'm the safest person for her. Like she can be fully herself, and all of herself with me. And so it was really, it stuck with her, like, why safety? Why was safety an issue for her? Like, why did she cry when people would talk about feeling unsafe? And she just didn't know why until she was driving home from this conference. And she realized as she was looking back in her own history that every person that she was with as soon as things would kind of advance sexually, whether that is one of her boyfriends in college, like, you know, my wife would, the idea, my wife didn't start being like sexually active in terms of, in the terms of the program, like the definition from the program of what sex is, until much later, like in like early college, late high school. And so when, for instance, her, you know, one of her first boyfriends tried to take off her bra, she, like, a couple weeks later, kind of like that, she like kind of brushed it to a side and, you know, used like directed things differently and had things go in a different direction. She ended up ending that relationship about 2 or 3 weeks later, not in the sense that she knew that that was the starting point of the ending of that relationship, but that was, as she looked back in hindsight, it turned out that, oh yeah, here's a point where this happened. And then 3 weeks later it ended. And then she kept going through all of her relationships and realizing that as things would advance sexually, the relationship would end. And then she talked about her relationship with me and that, you know, we advanced sexually and that we had intercourse, and she didn't want to lose me and not, and she realized that she didn't want to, she knew that that was a boundary for me. And I don't, honestly, I don't regret that that's a boundary. I communicated at the very beginning of like what, you know, was important to me, in regards to, I want to be married to somebody, like that sex being a part of the conversation and a part of that relationship prior to marriage was super important to me. And she understood that. And I don't regret that. But for her, she didn't want to, she had that fear of losing me. So instead of the relationship ending, it continued, but that intimacy died, right? That intimacy faded away. Whereas with the other previous people that she had been with, the relationship in and of itself just came to an end. So it was, so basically what my wife was telling me of like almost 20 years is that she felt unsafe. And that was, I can't honestly even tell you truly how deeply, how deeply painful that was. It felt like, because safety and consent and communication and all these things were such a part of who I am and who I wanted to be. And she didn't feel that way on an unconscious level. And I was so hurt, and not by her, but just it tore me apart. I was just sobbing. And I was like, you're telling me that like our entire relationship, we haven't had enthusiastic consent. And she's like, no, that's not what I mean. And it was just a bit, it was, I mean, we were up for, I mean, it was a, we have two kids now, so the XDs are late in the evening, because we can't do them in the morning because our kids are like, we're up at 6. Well, let's do it. The day's ready. Let's have a day. So we do those after the kids are in bed, and we were up like really late just talking that through and working that through. And it was just so painful and shocking to hear that even in this relationship where both of us feel super safe, Both of us are communicating extremely well. Both of us are so deeply in love with each other. And I grew up in the way I grew up and all these things. And I'm not putting any kind of pressure on her and like all that kind of, like, from my perspective. She still felt unsafe. And it was really hard to deal with. And we're still working through that. We're continuing to do these XDs on a weekly basis, which is really lovely. But we haven't had, you know, we've done sexual things based on her guidance and her intuition. And I, you know, am a conscious responder and like just hanging out and like being there for her and affirming if I need to be, and, you know, checking in when I need to, and et cetera. And, you know, and it's great. We're having a really good time. But we haven't had intercourse. I mean, the reset happened in February, but we had already reset prior to that. So, I mean, we haven't had intercourse since December, and it is currently April, and everything's fine for me. Like, this is great. Like, we're having a great time. Like, I feel really intimately connected to my wife and really, truly feeling like we're heading in towards a positive path as opposed to just kind of treading water.
Yeah, I think it could be really hard for people to understand how that happened, you know, when you were, your intentions were so great, and we just cannot downplay the effects of culture in what women can say and can't say. And that's really complicated, because you are hearing, you heard, yes, I'm ready, I want to do this. You checked in numerous times and it was a yes. You saw her facial expressions. You felt her body language. It was all a vibe, good vibes. And she had running in the background a voice that said, if you want this man, you need to give your body to him now.
Right.
And then the minute she used her body for anything else than her pleasure, that's when things started to change. And unfortunately, it was your first experience together. So everyone listening, this is a nuanced, deep, multifaceted, multi-layered issue.
Yep.
This isn't about hormones for the most part, not a doctor. This isn't about exhaustion. This isn't about kids. This isn't about anything else except for, can we tell the truth to each other? Is that possible? And for the most part, I have found that men can tell the truth to women. And women have been conditioned to not ever tell the truth.
And I think even just piggybacking off of that, I think it's so deeply ingrained to not tell the truth that I think it's an unconscious
situation. Unconscious.
You know, it's not even I'm not going to tell him because I don't want to lose him. It was just like it's so ingrained that it's just, I don't know why I am feeling this way. I don't know where this voice is, or even like why I can't, not even the voice, but like I can't fully connect, and I don't know why I can't fully connect. And, you know, it's just, ugh.
Yeah. And if all your experiences have felt that way.
Yeah.
When your boyfriend takes off your bra, you feel a little icky. But when you walk down the street and you get whistled at, feel a little icky. If your boss makes an inappropriate joke, feel a little icky. If that is the norm,
yeah,
then you don't even know that that feeling is telling you that there's something wrong. So she wouldn't even she wouldn't have even known. So this is completely unintentional, unconscious, until examined 20 years later. Ooh.
Yeah.
Intense.
Uh-huh.
What I'm curious about, so just so everyone knows, the paths for men, because the male track of the program is quite new, are different than women. So the first two are the same, cultivate compassion, establish safety. And then you go into some new stuff, fostering awareness, which is about your body sensations and emotions, taking responsibility, which is about knowing what matters, and reclaiming your humanity. That's about the type of person you want to be, so that you're acting, not so that you can get sex out of the deal, but you're acting because that is, at the end of the day, what you want to be known for. What were those three paths like for you?
Fostering awareness and
taking responsibility and reclaiming your humanity.
For me, it was interesting to experience, in the sense of I really loved the concept that basically her orgasm is up to her and my orgasm is up to me. And neither of us have provided, I don't know what the right word would be, instigated or whatever, an orgasm for the other person since December, like even as we were having XDs and such, like that's not what we've been doing. And it's just been really lovely. But also reclaiming your humanity, like having that idea of,
can I interrupt you here?
Yeah.
Would you feel comfortable sharing what an XD looks like for you?
Oh, sure. Yeah, we've had four XDs at this point. The first one was that really traumatic experience. And then just like cuddling for 10 minutes. The second XD was a lot of, all of this is in the guise of, all of this is within the understanding that I'm the responder and that I'm responding to what she's asking me to do. So the second one was a lot of just like touch exploration of like her back and her shoulders and her legs, and then her exploring my body and seeing like what it is that she enjoys about touching my body. And then there was some, and in that also there was some exploration of her breasts with my mouth and like that kind of a thing. And she enjoyed that, which she'd never really enjoyed before, like ever. That was very new to both of us, which was really exciting. And then the third XD was where there was similar touch exploration, but then she wanted me to explore her vulva and just kind of like with my hands and just kind of have an understanding of like, she said, pretend like you've never experienced it before and you're discovering it for the first time. And I was like, okay, cool. So, you know, we're just having a good time and just seeing what is interesting and trying different things with my hands, and not with a goal. Like there wasn't a goal. It was just, let's just see what's going on down there. Mm-hmm. Now, this is new and exciting. You know, taking that prompt quite literally and just really exploring that part of her body, but like not visually, just kind of like hanging out with her, like laying next to her face, and like, you know, my face and her face are close to each other, and just like exploring it with my hands, exploring her vulva with my hands and stuff. And, you know, that was fun. And then just making sure that everything was okay, and that, you know, things were, like, even though she was bodily responding to it, and vocally responding to it, she, just also checking in with her to make sure that it was still like everything, because even with body response and etc., still doesn't mean that it's okay. So she but yeah, she was okay with that. And then but she didn't have an orgasm, and that's great. And then the last XD we had was we played a board game together. So, like, you know, every single one of them is a brand new experience. There's no, like, you're not building, like, you know, there's no scaffolding, you know. It's like, first we do this, and then we do that, and then step three is this, and like all that kind of stuff. That's not a thing. And so not having that expectation, or having the pressure of, if we even start at level one, we're going to get to level 10, you know what I mean? It's really nice.
And even the level 10, is that really still the
right?
Is the intention that you want actually coming out of it? So right. There's such a hierarchy of pleasure in our culture, hierarchy of events, third base, whatever.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
And but if you go into it like you're saying, which with the intention of exploring, being curious, down to the basic building blocks of what connection and pleasure could look like. Even just the basics of running your hand down her labia, for example. And what does that feel like? Is it smooth? Is it warm? Is it slippery? Is it rough? Even just like the most basic of the basics. And for her on her end, what is it, tingly? Is it smooth? Does it feel good? Like, it's just you could spend hours just in that one exploration and curiosity without the angst and anxiety and stress of trying to get to orgasm, which is what can happen a lot, especially for women, is like, am I getting aroused enough? Am I lubricated enough? Yeah, even orgasm can be mingled with a lot of stress for women. So it's just, I'm so excited for you both that you're on this journey, and you've gotten some, you know, through some of those more difficult conversations, and that's ongoing. Cause I can imagine now when you're checking in with her, you've got a little voice in the back of your head that's like, is she, you know, she's saying yes, but, you know, like, is it like what? You know, and that's a learning curve for both of you. It's a learning curve for her to be able to tell the truth, and honestly, and get over, you know, not get over, but maybe accept and have compassion for some of the fears that she may have about hurting your feelings, or you know, ruining the mood or something.
Yeah,
like that.
So. Yeah, yeah.
Colin, yeah. it was a joy to speak with you. Is there anything else that we weren't able to get to that you were hoping to be able to share?
I would just say that if folks were on the fence about the program, regardless of where they are in terms of their knowledge and experience, like, say I'm just speaking to the other dudes who grew up in similar situations as I have. If you are listening to the podcast, it means there's something going on that needs to be explored and examined. And one of my favorite quotes to live by is that the unexamined life is not worth living. And I feel like in this way, examining this part of your life is a really important aspect of not happiness, but contentment and joy and finding or refinding the connection with the person that you met, for my instance, 20 years ago. And finding those things that bring you together. Because now you have all of those years of experience of being together, and how, and that trust that's built, so that you can have these conversations and do these things with the basis of knowing that everybody is coming up from it with the best intentions.
That may become my favorite quote as well. I definitely love to live by that, much to the maybe frustration of those who live with me, because we never stop learning and growing and pushing and expanding. And so here's to that, Colin. Thanks again for joining me on this conversation. And thanks to everyone who have listened right to the end. I hope you got as much out of this conversation as I did. Talk to you in the next one. If you've enjoyed this episode, I have a favor to ask of you. It's really hard to get the word out about a podcast about sex. What would really, really help is if you would leave a rating and a review. And I know that you get asked this all the time in different podcasts, but please, I beg you, it would really, really help so that more women who need this message will hear it. All you have to do is go into your Apple Podcast app. It's the purple icon. And if you go to the podcast page where it shows my face, and has a little button that says latest episodes. If you scroll down past the episodes and you get to a section called ratings and reviews, there's a little purple writing thing that says write a review. If you click on that, it will ask you to give it a 5 stars. Actually, you can put any stars, but 5 is what I would love. And put a title and then write your review. Thank you so much for supporting this little venture here, and I really am so grateful. If you are curious about wanting it more and how this program could help you want and enjoy sex more with your husband, and you feel like it may be a great next step for you, you can go to janadentonhouse.com/wantingitmore to sign up for the wait list, to learn more, to see when we're running our next round. All right, that's it. I'll see you next one.